Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Masonic Effects. Some days you just start your day with that sense of appreciation, don't you? Or you might drag yourself to the coffee pot looking a bit blurry and trying to settle into the day gradually, you know, out of that brain fog, whatever that's caused by mine. I never make excuses for age, so I won't hear. I won't embarrass myself, and I'm not going to. It's like a old guys that presume that they have a sense of entitlement because they can walk around and speak with impunity. They don't have that much time left, and it doesn't make them look any more intelligent. In fact, it's always interesting when we seem to have to relearn how to handle the guys that have just gone off. They've lost the plot. And I hope I don't. If I come across like that, I'm surrounded by a cadre of people who will put me in my place. So if you want to join that crowd, I'll get you. Take a number. It's an interesting day here, and I think a cautionary note is due. Hello, Netherlands. Hello, Germany. Hello, Britain. Hello, Australia. I always like reaching it because from where I am, you're sitting there basking in this beautiful weather and. Spirit, it's a sense of nationality. It's wonderful to have you in Turkey and a pleasure. And Iran, wonderful to have you sit in. And Spain, thank you for our listeners from Spain. North America, it's quite a mosaic that we present. Hundreds Grand Lodges in the United States, tell me. And here in Canada, we're spread into these enormously huge jurisdictions that are puzzling. They present such incredible logistic problems or challenges for organizations like ours, how to administer that much space. And certainly we know it doesn't work centrally because it just breaks down. It's like when I was working in the Arctic, some notary, world renowned something or other would fly in and fly out. And it was like, big deal. big deal here? Are they interesting? Are they friendly? Are they making any contribution? Or as the folks that lived up there forever would think, they're here to take something, which is primarily the case. So, you know, that sense of inclusion, it's interesting, isn't it? We want to be inclusive. We want to be happy all the time. We want to be there in a spirit of conviviality and sensibility, because that's the job description. Except that's the way a lot of people around me are treating it. It's like a job description. Over there, I shake my fist at you guys on the continent, as we like to say. The inspiration of the arts didn't come across on the ships. What the hell? You kept the best part for yourself, you know. You kept the tradition, you kept the history, you didn't even bother to dust it off and doll it up like we do over here. You just put it out there, and you seemed enormously, incredibly proud of it. The missteps and the survival and the reformations, the new alliances, and when we look at it, when you study it, if you're inclined, it doesn't stand out as military conquest. It stands out as an important statement of the progress of humanity. I'm sorry, yep, I put you up there. And if I have any listeners out there, I don't hear any clicking in the background here on this line, but if I do have any listeners from Russia or China, it's impossible to say what I just did without acknowledging the immense capacity of both of the people in those regions, in your regions. There is the integration is, I think, self-evident. It's like I'm suggesting that light exists, but gravity doesn't. It is enormously important that we recognize and I think respect the properties and laws that truly govern us. And they're not man-made. Oops, did I say that out loud? My goodness. This isn't a gentleman's agreement. This isn't a gentleman. Fool on you if you took it as a gentleman's agreement, huh? We screwed you, huh? It isn't what you expected. No, this isn't a gentleman's agreement. This is a commitment, and and with that we think in long, long terms of tradition. And participation, absorbing the refinement. Always with tradition, I can look back at the battle, the first battle of Alexander. I'm not there suffering or witnessing the slaughter. I'm not there doing that. I can, with this much time, I can now look at in hindsight, at the silver lining. What else is there to look at? Degradation? We know where that goes. No, we look at the accomplishment. And in time, people will look back at what's going on around me in this patch of the Masonic universe. And I hope that this will be a step toward a more intense, a more in-depth, a more rewarding future. That's not going to happen just because the likes of me brings it up, suggests that. What we're going through different periods as Masonry is always, there's a resilience to these ideas. The resilience is when we can bring ourselves to philosophical interpretations of what's going on around us, then it does. It lightens the load. It lets us not dismiss, but float above it and travel along with it. Here, in a lot of ways, in many, many ways in my thinking, masonry is that proverbial chip that the Zen master has been talking to us about. You're living in this journey of turmoil and challenge, and yet you can think of yourself being thrown against the rocks and damaged as life goes on, or you can think of yourself as that very insignificant little chip that flows, tossed around by this mighty current, but floats on the top as it's tossed around by these currents and eddies. It seems to feel that it feels that masonry takes us closer in a lot of ways, takes us closer to that, not shying away from what's happening around us, but embracing it. And coming to some degree of understanding, not necessarily as an abstract notion, but as something purposeful that allows us to influence decisions, to be influenced by what's going on around, and rather than being told as some would like us to believe what to do, being taught how to do the next thing right, instead of how to do the right thing. I don't see. It's a very thin veil between those, I think, at sometimes, and then at other times I think it's a chasm that, and it is as it is. That is that that declining orbit is as much a part of what's going on around us as is our star, generating all this light and energy. It's purposeful in that regard, in that broader sense, and I can feel some comfort in that experience. Is fraught with the impressions that you have when you're walking through the battlefield the next morning. It's not joyous and uplifting. It's not where some degree of lie is going to be useful, or a politician is going to be considered a leader. It's where we need that reframing, that we acknowledge the overwhelming suffering, and then out of sheer necessity, there is no point to sit back and to cry, to weep the moment, to suffer the moment, to move forward, because it's necessary. And that's in some ways, I think, when I see and hear the discouragement and tension around me, I think that, my goodness, nobody is helping these soldiers in the battlefield, however their state. They're feeling that they can't go on, and I cannot in my mind for a moment think that it is the failure of masonry, but the failure of the people who have been attempting to attempting a protracted version. They've extracted some things from the craft, and the work is incomplete, and so the impact, the influence is incomplete. Making some sense here, I hope. My goodness, we aren't the place where I am, where we assume that beauty is part of the Masonic experience. No, we're still and more at the bivouac, you know, just get through it, find the fresh water, learn to make a fire in a snowstorm, and get through the night without freezing your toes off. Beauty? Nah, that's... But at some point, we sent some travelers over to you guys, and we came back with these marvelous stories. We seem to do better in history in many ways than we do in real life. I'm going to say that about my local situation. History seems it's just glorious. We have this glorious history. But in real and we haven't really unpacked it. You know, we haven't been paying much attention to that until now. We have some really interesting work happening around me that will hit the airways real soon, I'm sure. But the situation that we need to be able, I think, rely on some, be hopeful. Not because we're blindly, pleasingly hopeful. We can knock you down as many times. You're going to keep bouncing back. But we know how to resolve. We know how to bob and weave. And we're taking fewer body blows. the notion is that Freemasonry is going to work best with intelligent people. And of course, because you expect a sense of being able to absorb the philosophical themes. I'm not belittling these guys, but they shouldn't be at the front of the audience when a lecturer speaks, looking at their watch and tapping their foot as if they have someplace better to be. The beauty is around us, and yet, I'm able to respect that it's the inspiration that we would like to think exists everywhere around us. Is not for me to impose on any person. Not for me to impose. It's the respect to talk about the notion, you know, and ask, here, take this little notebook, and if and when you have the, you know, that spontaneous cascade of ingenuity where things begin to fit together. You know, you have those moments, I'm sure. Could you write down a few prompts? Not for me, no, but so that when I happen to run into you, we can talk about them because you'll have that little notebook with you and the prompts. And even the fact that you have it with you may be prompt enough. You know what I mean. Today's program, The Confidence of Masonry, really, it begins with the question, and we make some suppositions. Yeah, I know. You always have to make some suppositions here on Masonic effects. And I would love you to top up your cappuccino or your espresso or your single malt or your cold one. Sit back. Perhaps you've put on the headphones already. And so you and I are having a private moment. Relax a bit. So that I relax with some jazz, with some poetry. The poetry today, I'll tell you the jazz. I'm using a playlist, if you will, of performers, musicians that inspired Miles Davis. So, no, I'm not conjuring. Sometimes I like to stray and think that I'm hearing something that I just indulge myself. But his playlist, his memory was pretty, he's pretty astute, pretty sharp when it came to listening to people and knowing the talent that was around him. And so the tunes, all of them, the performers today, you know, Clark Terry and Gene Emmons and, I've got one here that has slipped in. Herbie Hancock didn't make the list, but it's not to say he wasn't on the list, just not the one that I heard. And Cannon was going to begin. We're going to open up with something by Cannonball Adderley, charming music. So after everybody has stepped off the stage, you know, musicians, when they get off the stage where they have that persona, that stage presence, and they go back to relax with the crew and with the other musicians, what music do they play for themselves? Well, sometimes it's showy and fun, and other times it's just remarkably touching. You know, it's music that just penetrates. So it's the kind of show we have today. If it penetrates, serve the purpose. I have something that I have to sip here, so I'm going to stop talking and give you some relief with Cannonball Adderley. And thanks for tuning in, by the way. Can you imagine? This is the album Something Else. Can you imagine performing with Miles Davis on that kind of album? Just what the energy in the room in the studio must be like. That energy, that synergy is how I think of masonry when I walk into the room. That's how I think of you when you're there with me. Talent, just raw talent. We put our toe into this pool, the confidence of masonry. This has been a topic that's been with me for a long time, and one that I've been hesitant to talk about because it needed a bit of rethink, constant rethink. What builds confidence in good men is on display throughout Freemasonry. So I can't tell you what that is, but it's on display. The importance is not occasional or elective. It is strong because our obligations are uncompromising. When we see merit being ignored, it is a bell toll to rally and push back, not rashly, but to control stability, to control the thought. We would rather, I think, be criticized than lower standards. I should say rather be mocked than lower the standards. It takes confidence across lodges to be influential. It takes men capable of validating the issues at hand, staying true to our values, to who we are as Freemasons. And worldwide, we are getting to know the unknown brother who represents all the qualities. We prefer to avoid shaming or requiring acts of contrition, but to protect truth-based systems is a choice. Standing in solidarity with each other, asking the hard questions. Mm-hmm. Right now, old world masonry is gaining more attention by letting the world know the transformation of character is a serious commitment, not an evening of distraction. In a place overrun with materialism, we're splitting rather than complying with ideology. Only a man of character can take necessary steps to protect unvarnished truth. What builds confidence is knowledge that is consistent, that we can trust without intermediates. What we did when universities were attacked is an uncomfortable mirror of reality. We need to continue to encourage the narrative, of course, but if we are strong in our convictions, and if our convictions are based on our virtuous world and values, we will deal with any and all attacks as gentlemen. Not at all soft, but as penetrating, calculating the outcome. Quiet diplomacy is our wheelhouse. Think long and hard and enjoy the freedom to weigh in. Thank you. That'll have to do, eh? Lewis Smith. Yeah, that'll get by in a pinch. Stardust. If I had the attention of younger men and the mood developed, the atmosphere developed so that it was right to speak of such things, I would tell them and talk to them about something they may already in the back of their mind be aware, they'd already know. It brings us to the part of the show where we bring up a poet and talk about the work, what that kind of detail and courage does for us, how much it enhances. I can't think of art now, even in spite of the rather labored efforts of the teachers that early on came and did their job and proudly took home their paycheck and could barely tolerate the little urchins around them, let alone one encouragement by one teacher in all those years. And what is significant? That matters. But these are the longings. When do you have that proper conversation? My son-in-law is still so skittish around me. My goodness, just relax. Take a deep breath. We get to know each other more and more. He's a cautious man. I like that. This is it took me today. You know, I don't just try and recklessly think about throw in whatever poetry just to fill the blank, but it needs to make sense, some sense to me, so that I can at least talk in a sensible way to you about it. The attention to details, it's so different with each, and the way their minds work, we learn more about the man if we're looking at his writings. The title of this is you'll fill in the blank already, my lost youth. Filled in the blank, didn't you? Yeah, thank you. This is by, I started off, for whatever reason, this time of year when it's just bitterly, bitterly cold around me, I tend to think it's probably just the linguistics. You know, I just tend to think of the work of Robert Frost because it perks me up. And I just enjoy the name. I just think it's an ideal name for a poet. But if you're asking me the great poets around, I'm ashamed to say he's not on my list. But here, his work. I was doing some exploration and investigation, and his work led me very, very quickly to Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and to this poem, My Lost Youth. And in it, there's a line that was borrowed from, the connection is that he borrowed a line from Frost. Now, Frost borrowed a line. During his lifetime, Longfellow was much admired, both in the United States. I think he's from Massachusetts. And try to think of this before the cultural decline. You know, here's a person very much with a sense of mastery. So he's honored, and if it matters, there's a memorial bust of him. You know, in Westminster Abbey, there's a poet's corner, and there's a bust of Longfellow there. That kind of recognition, the sweetness and gentleness and simplicity makes grown men sigh. And he was skilled. He was skilled at his art. And I know it's written that it's the American spirit, but very little of it is. It's like, you know, mom and apple pie. Well, they didn't invent apple pie, and everybody's got a mother. But, you know, that claim, that audacity that carried that country for a long, long time, and still is evident. But he failed the claim is that compared to Walt Whitman, he didn't quite catch that spirit, which I'm grateful for in a lot of ways. But it was said that his work lacked the emotional depth and imaginative power. But you decide. Here's a nice, interesting quote. Some years after Longfellow's death, a violent reaction set in against his verse as critics dismissed his conventional high-minded sentiments and gentle strain of erraticism that he had made so popular. This is a harsh critical assessment. And it tried to reduce him to the status of a mere rhymer, you know. Blah, 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 blah. And it failed. It tried to undo some of the adulation that he had received during his lifetime. But, whatever meagerness prompted that, it hasn't been successful. Now, we could talk about his poetry, his Paul Revere's Ride, probably one of the well-known, because, you know, I'm just suggesting here that all may not have been the primary part of that whole story, and a woman may have been more prevalent in that story. do your own search. I want you, of course, look for this. Look, I'll give you some prompts here. You know, we're sitting down at the opera. I'm at least going to tell you what the storyline is about, so you know what to look for. And, you know, I'll try and do that as a friend. But this is a lyrical autobiography of his early life in Portland, Maine. And it's about a boy who climbed on the streets and gazed over its harbors, and he was dreaming, you know. Have you never looked out at the sea and dreamed, the ocean and dreamed? Whew, my goodness. Pity you for not having done that, eh? See what you think. I'm not going to do all, there's 10 9-line stanzas, so I'm not going to do all of that, no. But you'll catch the drift of this dreamer very, very quickly. And I'll be selective and encourage you to go back and take a look. Often I think of the beautiful town that is seated by the sea. Often in thought go up and down the pleasant streets of that dear old town. And my youth comes back to me, and a verse of a Lapland song is haunting my memory still. A boy's will is the wind's will, and the thoughts of youth are long, long thoughts. I can see the shadowy lines of its trees and catch in sudden gleams the sheer of far surrounding seas and islands that were the Hesperides of all my boyish dreams, and the burden of that old song it murmurs and whispers still. A boy's will is the wind's will, and the thoughts of youth are long, long thoughts. I remember the black wharfs and the slips and the sea tides tossing free, and the Spanish sailors with bearded lips, and the beauty and mystery of the ships and the magic of the sea, and the voice of that wayward song. It's singing and saying still, a boy's will is the wind's will, and the thoughts of youth are long, long thoughts. I remember the sea fight far away, and how it thundered o'er the tide and the dead captains as they lay in their graves, overlooking the tranquil bay where they in battle died. And the sound of that mournful song goes through me still with a thrill. A boy's will is the wind's will, and the thoughts of youth are long, long thoughts. There are things of which I may not speak. There are dreams that cannot die. There are thoughts that make the strong heart weak and bring a pallor into the cheek and a mist before the eye. And the words of that fatal song come over me like a chill. A boy's will is the wind's will, and the thoughts of youth are long, long thoughts. And Deering's words are fresh and fair, and with joy that is almost pain, my heart goes back to wander there, and among the dreams of the days that were, I find my lost youth again, and the strange and beautiful song. The groves are repeating it still. A boy's will is the wind's will, and the thoughts of youth are long, long thoughts. Thank you. 1958. It wasn't just about big boxy cars in Detroit. No. This is a turn to the backstory of masonry here. Go from leaning into the detail where you're walking along and all of a sudden you have that boyish curiosity. You lean in and you wanted to look at the flower and see what it was. And you pull the petals off and then you saw this, what's this on my finger? This pollen, we learn later. Or we watch the bees feeding on them, yeah? You go from that and then thinking, how does this make me feel? How does it make me feel when I look around and I see, that's kind of interesting. What in the world am I looking at? And doesn't that trigger some thoughts of things that I've read about, those beautiful ideal images that we read about from history? Well, I'm just, if you are well read, if you're not, that masonry is your opportunity to do that without embarrassing yourself. But at the end of the day, what effect and influence it has comes about when you make these kind of connections. And of course, that takes us to the backstory. Go from that to the backstory, a shift in time, all to help us address the moment, to enrich our experience in the moment. And we've been looking at the history of Dutch Freemasonry and finding some very interesting connections and some interesting developments that help us, because we can assume in a large way, I think, that the question, if it happened there and it happened then, is it happening around us? Well, yeah, I would say absolutely. And it begins like this. Once the government of Dutch Freemasonry was put in place, we're looking at, you know, middle 18th century, yeah, about 1756, the British Grand Master, the Marquis of Carnarvon, authorized it all. So Carnarvon, sorry. Once the government of Dutch Freemasonry was put in place, eventually all the lodges, sounds a little bit like Scotland and Ireland. Eh? Here we are, we're forming this. Yeah, okay, we've been doing it for a long time, so settle down, and you're English. But it required some negotiation, and still there's dissension. But it recognized the sovereignty of the National Grand Lodge. And that was, you know, a connection with Masonry. It was regular, connected with the Mother Grand Lodge. To do so, members placed their hands on a book that included either the constitutions of the society or the principles of the right of nature, entered into the contract with the Grand Lodge. Meetings of this new Grand Lodge opened with brothers saluting the estates general and the hereditary stadtholder. So despite the opposition of both a political and religious origin, this new and secular form of civil society was firmly established in the Republic by the late 1750s. It was quick. By the early 1760s, it was beginning to speak about itself within a national context, governed by its own constitution or by the rights of nature. Yet in some quarters, Freemasons continued to be attacked as deists or atheists or as rebels. The lodges were seen as training grounds for heresy and tumult. There was nothing particular new in these accusations. What is interesting is their staying power and what they tell us about how the pious may have viewed their secular festivities well into the 1780s. Language about the nation and the rights of nature found in Masonic minutes and records was, however, new to this age. In these private societies, the words were applied to an operative system of civil governance. At the monthly proceedings of the main Amsterdam Lodge, which resumed in 1754 and continued throughout the century, we see that system in operation, and we suggest that it's a form owed something to Rousset's mid-century reading of John Locke. I'll leave it to you to take a look at that, but it's worth a look. Given the implications of the language and behavior for the subsequent development of Western theories and practices of government, we visit individual lodges to see, finally, and to take one more look at the origins of these small private societies in continental Europe, Freemasonry in continental Europe, evoked the specter of free thinking, of atheism and pantheism. We must remember that these accusations were always quite serious, not just in the Netherlands, but in any European country. Where's the pushback today? Churches are empty, except for the usual small group of white-haired elderly people about to face their mortality. Trust has faded. And I can't help but think that it's the toxicity of aggression that has brought it down. The tone, an aggressive tone, is off-putting. It's not an assertion anymore. Never was. When we see somebody, I've not had the pleasure, but I've seen somebody that's very, very bright that doesn't have control over their messaging, how they sound. It must be just good luck that the brightest people, the people that have been quite impressive to my meager mind, my simple background, have been people of great humility, and that allowed their words and thoughts to penetrate, even to penetrate resistance, that pushback. I don't like this idea because I don't like you, and I don't like you because I've conjured up some connection with malevolence so that I can justify all of this. And then if there is reasoning and accuracy in what you say, it's undeniable. Would you hesitate to talk and speak with people if it took them a long, long time, it took them their own time for them to agree with your manner and your ideas? What if it took them so long that they forgot that it was you that said them? Would that stop you from talking? Would that lessen the vigor of you, the accuracy and the truth of what you say? Truth, without you ever declaring it. That they discover in the meaningful way, just as you and I and others have done, the truth of the information around us, the truth of impressions. Would it lessen the messenger when people get up and it's like, can you imagine these scenes? And the easy one for me is people that were ridiculing. Remember when Dylan went from an acoustic guitar, you know, Bob Dylan, acoustic folk artist, and he plugged in, went out on stage at a performance unannounced, with electric guitars and amplifiers, microphones. Boo. Except not boo. But you can imagine when people that were there booing with their mates and the best of them came away, looked at what was going on, you know, this ground swell of this newness, this poetry, and said, let's rethink that one, and had a change of heart. Easy today to lose track of the visioning, the purpose, the aim. Easy, it's easy. And nobody, I think, will fault you, except you. We look for leadership, and then we find there's flaws, you know. He goes off and he has some things to say, but then he goes a little too far, you know. she was genius, and then she started communing with the underworld. What's that about? So we're selective. The impressions that we have, we're not children. It's not about immediacy. Do you need an idea? Do you need to be exposed to the idea and then a sweet put on your tongue immediately so that you like the idea? Is that? That's far too Pavlovian, even for us, don't you think? What if we need to digest it? And at first, we don't like the taste. It's a new one. I don't think I like this. No, I'm not going to eat. That's an oyster. I'm not. Oh, this, that's rock. Oh, I can't do that. Oh, lobster. Why would I do? Why would you look at the? It has eyes. Scotch. Oh, all that smokiness. Oh, jeez. Cappuccino. Why are you actually? It's too strong. You like that? And then, I don't think I like jazz. No. It doesn't have any fiddlers. I can't stop my feet. There's no, what do I sing along to? And then one day you sit, and the fellow is sitting in the seat next to you says, no, don't applaud so loudly. This is only his first song, and tenors have huge egos. Make him work for the applause. And said with his beautiful, dramatic Italian accent, yeah? And so the next time it's tap, 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 tap. And an hour later, the tenor is performing and reaching to the audience, and the audience is ecstatic. Temperance, huh? Timing. Like the time right now, I look at it and you need to wrap up. You go your way. You contemplate your thoughts. You influence the world around you as you're prone to do. You do it with a smile and watch. Watch the effect of your smile on people around you. Disarming, far, far more than that. Right now, the world does need us, but that doesn't mean we're going to be capable to step up. Is it drama that says we're at a turning point? We've always been at a turning point, haven't we? But we have some dark days coming, and we all know about that stuff. It's happened before. And even here where we've lived, where our government has been doing some very dark deeds and handing out rose-colored glasses, nobody's buying it anymore. Nobody's buying it. We need to face we're facing the music, and we need values. And the church, that hasn't done it. And politics, that hasn't done it. Military needs to be watched. My Lord, don't let them out on their own. The cop in the street. We need them. Son of a gun, we need them, but they're a pain in the neck, and they have to be watched because they're using authority, and that's our responsibility. Extend the authority, but we're responsible for that. And we're learning about these new responsibilities. Who better to guide people, to influence people? Who better to let people stew over their own thoughts and struggle with them? I don't like that. I don't like that. And then, there's nobody yelling at me. I'm going to hate it because I hate him. I'm going to hate it because I don't like the color of his skin. But, he makes sense. And I like how he sang his, I like his songs. And I like his messaging. And then the big reveal, what kind of person are you, am I? I talk about inclusion, but am I up to it? Do I live it? Do I feel the moment? Well, not enough to cut corners anymore. We need to express and experience the fullness. That's That's that delicacy that we hear when you're listening to this music, where one phrase from one instrument is passed on to the next performer and to the next and to the next, and then it reaches this this melody, this crescendo, this energy. Thank you for sitting in. I hope it's had that that kind of use for you today. And it's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed this program. And I'm going to go back and leave you here. Get some more something to drink. And go through the all 10 stanzas of Longfellow's poetry. Then I'll start the day. It's been really a pleasure and fun to sit in with you. And send you on your way with a little bit of Clark Terry. Everything's mellow. Cheers. Thank you.